So because we have you two young devotees here in the front row, we're going to spend a little bit of time getting you involved in the subject matter a little bit. That's okay? Okay. I'm just going to share some things with you about Lord Brahma. And here's a few things. At the very, 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 very beginning of creation, he's the firstborn living being. Lord Brahma comes directly from Lord Vishnu, from the body of Lord Vishnu. The total karma of all the living entities within the entire universe, the karma of the living entities within the universe, manifests itself as a lotus stem and a lotus flower, and Brahma appears on top of that lotus flower. And he's very intelligent, firstborn living being. But there's no universe yet. There's a Vishnu and darkness in all directions within the universe. Because half of the universe is water, the Garbhadak ocean. Bottom half of this universe is water. And the upper half, where Garbhadakshai Vishnu rests, comes Lord Brahma, who appears at the very, very top of the universe. And many things happen, but Brahma, in addition to being the firstborn living being, he is given potency by Vishnu and a plan how to build the universe and all the ingredients to build the universe and self-knowledge. He becomes a fully self-realized person and he builds the universe. So he's the firstborn living being and he creates the universe. He builds it. The ingredients and everything come from Vishnu, but he puts it together like an engineer, chief engineer of the whole universe. And then he fills up the universe with living entities. So he's the original grandfather of all living entities, all living entities, all species, not just humans, but all species. He's the original grandfather. And another thing, the fourth thing, is he gives knowledge. So the firstborn living being, he creates the universe, he fills up the universe with living beings, and he gives knowledge. All the Vedas are manifested first within him, and he disseminates that knowledge of the Vedas to others. So that's where we get the Vedas from Brahma. And Brahma gets them directly from the Supreme Lord, from the Lord in his heart. And he manifests them. And so now the universe is built. And within this universe, there's this earth planet. That's where we are now. That's just a small part of the whole universe. And it's in the middle range of all the planetary systems within the universe. And Krishna makes his appearance once in every day of Brahma, which is a long number of years, in Vrindavan. So Krishna appears in Vrindavan once in a day of Brahma. And when Krishna appeared in Vrindavan, Lord Brahma, because Brahma's planet is in the topmost place in the whole universe, and he comes down to this middle region of planets in the universe and visits Krishna in Vrindavan. He wants to pay his respects to Krishna in Vrindavan. And when he sees Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, he goes back and looks. There they are in the cave. And he goes back and looks, and there they are having lunch. What's going on? And so then, because Brahma was curious, Krishna satisfies his curiosity. Brahma not only had manifest himself in identical forms of calves and cowherd boys, But he then showed that each one of the cowherd boys and calves simultaneously a form of Narayan. You know who is Narayan, right? Lord of this Vaikuntha. And surrounding Narayan are all of Narayan's potencies, and he's got a lot of potencies. And they're personified, and they're singing his praises. It's a big noise, big concert. And then he shows each one of those forms of Narayan manifesting forms of universes. There's like a whole bunch of universes. A universe is really big. How far can you see in this one universe? And so many universes. And then, poof, they all disappear. Just poof. And all that's left is Krishna smiling with unblinking eyes, looking directly at Lord Brahma, holding in his left hand, because he eats with his right hand, holding in his left hand some yogurt and rice, smiling. Brahma is overwhelmed. He falls before Krishna many times, obeisances, 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 and then he offers prayers. So that's what we're discussing, Brahma's prayers. And we're almost at the end of his prayers. We're in text 39. And there's only 40 verses of prayers. But they're really packed. He teaches the whole message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole message of the Vedas in a nutshell, in those verses. Many important messages. The section that just ended is Brahma's appreciation of the residents of Vrindavan. Now, Brahma is the firstborn living being. He's the creator of the universe. He's the original grandfather of all living entities. He gives knowledge of the Vedas. He does other things too. He's way up there. But he considers himself totally insignificant compared to the residents of Vrindavan. He offers a prayer to Krishna. I just want the dust from the feet of the residents of Vrindavan on my head, but I don't feel qualified to ask them. So please grant this request that I can take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan, and they may step on me, and that way I get some dust on my head, and then I can get the mercy of the residents of Vrindavan, because the residents of Vrindavan have such love for you, and you give yourself to them because of their love for you. I'll receive your mercy by becoming a blade of grass in Vrindavan. He's very clever, very intelligent. But he's holding, this intelligent person is holding the residents of Vrindavan way up there, and he is way down here. He's recognizing that form of Krishna that's in front of him is the source of everything. Everything material, everything spiritual comes from him. The universes come from him. The avatars within the universe come from him. All living entities come from him. All matter comes from him. Everything comes from him. And it's this little boy. And he's Brahma, the firstborn living being. He says, "You're my father." And Krishna said, "Wait a minute. You're the firstborn living being, and I'm just 7 years old. What are you saying?" And Brahma says, "It's true. You're my father. I'll prove it." And he gives three proofs. We won't go into it. We already did that. He understands, although Krishna is assuming this small childlike form, he's actually the original source of everything. Within Krishna is everything. And he realizes it, not just he read it in a book some time ago. He realizes it in personal experience. But he said so many things in prayer And Krishna hasn't even responded a word. Not even a glance. So he's now going to make a request of Krishna. Not like you hurt my feeling because you didn't say anything, but I have the sense that all of my words mean nothing compared to the love that the cowherd boys have for you, and you want to go back and finish your lunch with the cowherd boys. So please give me your instruction and permission, and I think I should go back to Brahmaloka. Completely humbled and ashamed that I stole the calves and cowherd boys, and it was a bad thing. I asked for forgiveness. You didn't say anything. I asked to take a blade of grass. You didn't say anything. I think my words are meaningless, and I'd like to not make a fool of myself any further and I'll let you carry on with your pastimes with the cowherd boys. That's this evening's verse. I'm going to read the translation. And then the commentaries and see if there's some discussion. So this is Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text 39. My dear Krishna, I now humbly request permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes, and yet I offer this one universe unto you. Because he built it. Now he's built it, now he's offering it to the one who it really belongs to. And here's the purport. In his Krishna book, Prabhupada has quoted Lord Brahma as follows. You have a Krishna book? Yes? Yes or no? Yes. So maybe sometime you can read the story. It's nice. My dear Lord, Brahma says, although you are the Supreme Lord of all creation, I sometimes falsely think that I am the master of this universe. I may be the master of this universe, but there are innumerable universes. And there are also innumerable Brahmas who preside over these universes. But actually, you are the master of them all. As the super soul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope that you will excuse me for disturbing you in your pastimes with your friends and calves. Now, if you will kindly allow me, I will immediately leave so you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence. Unquote. And there's a Sanskrit reference from this verse. Sarvam tvam vetsi sarvadrik. These words are very significant. Lord Krishna knows that everything. Krishna knows everything and sees everything. And therefore, Lord Brahma did not need to remain in Vrindavan to maintain his personal living contact with the Lord. In fact, as the creator of the universe, Lord Brahma was somewhat out of place in the simple, blissful atmosphere of Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna was exhibiting his supreme opulences in herding cows, enjoying picnics, playing games, and so on. Paragraph. Upon seeing the intense love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, Brahma felt unqualified to remain there. He was not eager to give up the Lord's association, but he felt it better to return to his personal devotional service in Brahmaloka. Somewhat embarrassed and unhappy over his foolish attempt at bewildering the Lord, Brahma preferred to resume his transcendent loving service rather than trying to enjoy the Lord's presence. We have a few commentaries. And we're going to start with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Krishna is speaking. Oh, Brahma, so what if you cannot understand fully my powers? Can I understand your powers? Paragraph. In order to express the fact that he can no longer answer, Brahma, with shame, makes the following request, quote, please give the order, which expresses your true thoughts. Give the order to the fallen person himself, unqualified to remain before you for another minute. As I am most fallen, I will go to the suitable fallen place, Brahmaloka. O Krishna. And he comments this word Krishna means, what's the meaning of the word Krishna? Meaning of Krishna? All attractive. So he's implying, please attract my mind to Vrindavan. Your feature in Vrindavan. O Krishna, I pray to you that you make me a blade of grass in Gokula. That was five verses ago, text 34. But there has been no response from you, not even so much as a glance. So what more can I do standing here? Better I quickly go away, because I'm an offender for having interrupted your meal on the bank of the Jamuna. I am deprived of drop of nectar of one word from your lips. With your friends and calves, finish your pastimes with lively verbal exchanges and eating on the bank of the Jamuna. What indeed can I ask for in my tremulous, tremulous is a nice word, tremble, it's like trembling, quivering due to weakness or fear, in my trembling or tremulous condition, what can I ask for? With this intention, Brahma says, you know the power of my mind, words, and body. I am not the master of the universe. You are the master, not of one universe, but of all universes. This meager universe, which is your wealth, not mine, I offer to you. Give this universe to whomever you like, to whoever is qualified in your eyes. That's his next, because next verse is the last prayer. Now, Jiva Goswami comments. Similar idea. Brahma reveals bhakti endowed with humility, which was shown to be a cause of attaining the Lord in making his request to depart. Oh, Krishna, whose form and qualities attract all the senses, please give permission. He prays to leave, not because he wants to, but because he feels he's not qualified to be with the Lord, since the Lord remained silent while he was praying. All that I spoke to you, and that all that should be spoken about you, is mere repetition of words. You know everything. Your powers and my powers, your mind and my mind, your profound pastimes and my disqualification, I do not know. Without your permission, it is not possible even for grass to have auspiciousness in the form of grass. I cannot give up my position as a creator of the universe. Since you have offered the universe to me, I must carry out the order as a servant. If you say, how can you ask permission without my again seeing the boys and calves which you stole? I say that you know everything, and you see everything. You do not have to be informed about where they are. Now, have you ever thought, Brahma put the boys in the calves in a cave. So what happened after that? Are they like still in the cave? Because when it's over, they're having lunch with Krishna. So they must have somehow made it back from the cave to the lunch place. There's no description. We have very astute listeners, so I'm anticipating that question. I'm getting used to our listeners asking really tough questions. Hare Krishna. Sanatan Goswami writes, with the disappearance of all pride because of special mercy of the Lord arising from his prayer, being most humble, Brahma requests to leave for his abode with knowledge of the Lord. O Lord, revealing unlimited qualities as Bhagavan, you alone know your greatness, described in what I said, because you are omniscient, Sarvadrik. Being omniscient, do you not know everything? Since you are unlimited, I cannot praise you. Thus, I will now depart. In order to perfect bhakti by giving up my pride, I offer everything to you, this universe. Krishna replies, O Brahma, you asked for a birth just now in this place. Why are you going elsewhere? Brahma replies, I cannot stay here in this devata body with four heads. You are eager to enjoy with your devotees. Under the control of prema, O Krishna, dear to the people of Braja, you know that I cannot stay here, but I offer everything to you in order to achieve my request. You are the master of the universe. Though I desire to offer, I cannot do so. I offer to you what you have offered to me. Krishna replied, O Brahma, you are the Lord of the universe because you created. Why do you show such humility? Brahma, no, you are the Lord of the universe, and I'm only your servant. It is seen that this world composed of your energies is ruled by you. You offered me the universe. I am not the Lord. It is only ruled by me, by your offering it generously to me. And the final commentary, this is, again, Jiva Goswami, is Krama Sandarbha. It's short. O Krishna, endowed with attractive qualities, I now humbly request permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and the seer of all things. You are the Lord of all the universes. You have offered this universe to me for creating, O Krishna, whose form and qualities attract all the senses. Please give permission. He prays to leave not because he wants to, but he feels he is unqualified to be with the Lord since the Lord remained silent while he was praying. How can I remain when I cannot understand your thoughts? Since he's not speaking, I can't understand your thoughts, like, Hari Bol, see you later. But I cannot give up the object of my vision. You have offered this universe to me. It is suitable for the servant to follow your order. And so that's next to the last of his prayers. He's, as far as, I listed four things that Brahma does. Now I'm going to give number five. And this comes in his prayers also. He's the presiding deity of intelligence. There's, according to the Sankhya system, there's five senses for perception or acquiring knowledge, five senses for action, 5 + 5 generally equals 10. And then there's three more, mind, intelligence, and What's the number 13? False ego. False ego, our dear friend. False ego. You know what false ego is, right? False ego is you think you're somebody that you're not. Like if I think I'm Napoleon, I'm this little short guy and I put my hand in my vest like this and I tell people I'm Napoleon. If I think that I'm Napoleon, that's false ego. It's a kind of madness. I'm not Napoleon. But if I think I'm Napoleon, that's madness. And that's what false ego is. False ego is thinking we're somebody that we're not. That's a feature of false ego. We have a real identity. A real identity is a spiritual identity. But false ego covers that spiritual identity. We start to think that we're somebody that we're not. And then we live our whole life thinking we're somebody that we're not, and then we give up that body and take another body and think we're that somebody. And then another somebody and another somebody, and false ego has got us covered. So there's presiding deities of each of those 13. And one of those 13 is intelligence, and Brahma is the presiding deity of intelligence. You go to school, right? I mean, right now you're not because of this coronavirus, but how old are you? You're 9. Wow. You're 9. Okay. So, remotely you're getting homework from school, right? Online classes. Okay. So remotely you're getting online classes. So, to do your homework, you have to use your intelligence. But sometimes your intelligence doesn't work as well as you'd like it to work, and sometimes it works really well. So you should know that according to the Vedic picture, Brahma is the presiding deity of intelligence. Just like some people can run real fast. We were driving to come to your home, and there was this young fellow, he was running as fast as the car was going. We had to go those speed bumps, so we had to slow down. But so that running is something that one of the organs, the legs, do. It's the power of locomotion. But supposing somebody is paralyzed, or their legs are amputated, what happens? The power of locomotion may be replaced by those instruments with some other instruments, like maybe a wheelchair or something, because it's the power of locomotion. It's the power of locomotion. So similarly, the power of hearing, power of seeing, power of smelling, sense of touch, but sometimes the body goes numb and you can't feel anything. The power can be restricted. I mean, there's some way of describing what's going on with the circulatory system, but the power is being restricted. If the presiding deity doesn't work, and presiding deity of intelligence doesn't work, you can't do your homework. You can't even walk up and down the stairs. You can't, you know, anything that requires intelligence working with other of the senses. We're dependent upon these persons. So when Brahma puts the universe together, he knows all of this. He knows who's who and what's what and how to fit this puzzle piece together with that puzzle piece. It's very complicated, very, very, very involved. One of the homes we visited, in Naperville, I think, one of the families, the young boy, he's about your age, he's reading a book about, I don't know how to pronounce his name properly, Elon Musk, Elon Musk. You heard of his name? He's not a government guy. He's just a wealthy guy. And he's building spaceships and sending with his own money and his own team of people that have, you know, the smarts to do it, sending satellites into space. And not just like, I don't know exactly what he's trying to do, you know, gather knowledge from space. I don't know what he wants to gather knowledge from space for. I'm sure he's got a plan. But Elon Musk couldn't do what he's doing without Brahma. What to speak of the resources that come from, and Brahma can't do what Brahma does without the personality Godhead, without Super Soul. So everything's resting on Super Soul. And Brahma is saying, you're Super Soul. You're the source of all Super Souls. You're the source of all ingredients. You're the source of me. You're the source of everything. And you don't want to talk to me. And I think that's because you want to finish lunch with the Cowherd boys. So I'm an intruder. I'm an offender. I think I better stop talking. I think I better excuse myself and go back to the service that you gave me and overseeing the universe. But let me do it in the mood of I'm your servant. It's your universe and I'm the instrument of you to oversee the universe. That's your universe. You're the owner and I'm the manager. There's a difference between the two. Like there's lots of places that we passed coming over here. There's some homes and there's some apartments. And the apartments, there's a developer that built the thing and then there's somebody that buys it from the developer and he's the owner. And then somebody rents from the owner or they rent from a manager of the owner, but the manager is not the owner. And the tenant is not the owner. The owner is the owner. And the profits and the losses and the lawsuits and everything else goes to the owner, not to the tenant or the manager. So Brahma may be thinking this is my universe because I built it. Like, you know, the carpenter may be thinking that's my table because I built it. That's illusion. The table doesn't belong to the person who built it. It's how things work in this world. You do some work and then you own the fruits of your work. But in spiritual consciousness, the fruits of your work belong to the person that everything comes from. You offer it to the source of everything and then you're connected to the source of everything. That's karma yoga. Most people don't like karma yoga. They like to own things and try to be the enjoyer of the things that they own. And they're entangled in karma and complexities of life because of that consciousness. So Brahma has beyond that. He's offering the entire universe, not just the table or the fruits of his work. He's offering himself, his mind, his body, his words, everything to Krishna's service. And then he goes back to his service. In the next verse, he's going to make his final statement and then depart back to Brahmaloka. Having given to all of us, the readers of the Srimad Bhagavatam, a very elaborate picture of how it is that Krishna is the source of everything, how the residents of Vrindavan are most intimate in their loving relationship with Krishna amongst all living entities anywhere in the spiritual or the material world. They're the best. That's what we're learning from Brahma. So let's see if there's some discussion. Abrupt ending. Sorry about that. Caught you off guard. I hope I'll be able to hear. Go ahead, start. Can you speak? You got the microphone? Speak. Go ahead. Go ahead. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So the question I had was, when kind of like Brahma went and like kind of like paid his like obeisance to like Krishna, was Krishna like unhappy for the act that like Brahma made? Because like Krishna didn't want to speak to like Brahma and oblige his mistake. Instead, he wants to.
Are you asking did Krishna forgive Brahma? Yeah. Is that your question?
Yeah.
Krishna loves his devotees, and Brahma is a very, very, very qualified devotee. It's said that the post of Brahma is so important that if there isn't a qualified person, then Krishna will take the position because he has to be really qualified. There's elsewhere it's said that in order to be qualified, one has to flawlessly execute varnashram duties for 100 lifetimes. That's really something. I mean, try it for 1 hour. Try it for 10 minutes. So he's a very qualified person. And he has devotion. He's the head of a sampradaya. That's another one of his qualifications. So Krishna doesn't hold anything against Brahma. There's this verse from Bhagavad Gita, 9:30. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak sadureva samantavya. Krishna says, even if one does durachar or sudurachar, very bad activity, apichet, even if someone does like that, apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak, but they're consistently otherwise engaged in undivided devotional service, I consider that person sadhu. So Krishna considers Brahma sadhu. He made a big boo-boo, which was very unbecoming. And worse, it was like interrupting Krishna's pastimes. How dare you? And kidnapping? That's crime. And he kidnapped Krishna's coward boyfriends. Gosh, you know, put him in jail. But Krishna's very dear devotee. So Krishna considers him sadhu. So more than forgave him. He taught him a lesson. Never do this again. And don't be caught up with your sense of self-importance. You know, this false ego topic that we were speaking about earlier. Watch it. So, you know, like a parent, if the parent of a child has a child that does something naughty, they love their child. And the child, you know, comes forward and says, I recognize I've done something very foolish. Please accept my sincere apology. I don't think the parent is going to be silent like Krishna was with Brahma, but not, you know, certainly forgiving.
Very much.
Hi, Krishna.
Like, how do I focus more on Krishna?
How do we focus more on Krishna? Well, we need to find something that's in relation to Krishna that we like. So lots of young people, not every young person, but lots of young people, they like kirtan. You like kirtan?
Yeah.
So then get together with your friends and do kirtan. And even if you're not with your friends, you can practice. You can listen to kirtan. He has tons of recordings of kirtan. And sing along and learn the melody. And then when you get together with your friends, you can teach them a new melody and you can sing along together. And so find things that you like that are in relation to Krishna, and you do them in the mindfulness of this is for Krishna's pleasure, not just because it's about me, I like music, and here we go, music. I know some people that are like that, but do that for Krishna. And let's say probably your mom likes to cook. So then do that for Krishna and so forth.
When
you're chanting,
my mind goes to something else.
Your mind goes to something else when you're chanting. You're not the only one. So what to do? Well, you go on chanting anyways, but as you go on chanting anyways, you try to practice exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, bring it back to him. So, would you like to know how many years I've been chanting? A lot of years. I started chanting when I was in college. I was 20. And now, 51 years later, I'm still chanting. That's a lot of time to practice. You're 9. You got some ways to go yet. But as you're going, the mind will wander and you bring it back. Your mind goes over there. It's like training a monkey. But monkeys can be trained, so you certainly can train your mind. Practice. Abhyasa in Sanskrit. Abhyasa. And according to the yoga system, Patanjali teaches, Abhyasa has three parts. One, every day. Practice every day. And then second is for a prolonged period of time. And third is very important. This is very important. And that is, you do so, the practice over a period of time with the faith that is going to take you to not be so distracted anymore, but be attracted to Krishna instead. It's not like, okay, overnight it happens, like you flick a switch and the light goes on. It's not like that. It's gradual. But one feels the connection. And when you feel that connection, the distraction becomes less. So faith is very important. So that you cannot be distracted. Over a period of time, every day. That's what the advice that's given. Is that good advice? Yeah. Then comes doing it. Practice. So the big part is the faith. Because let's just assume you chant. Are you chanting every day?
Not every day.
Not every day? Okay. At some point in your growing up, you'll chant every day. I know a girl that just turned 13. And she chants every day. She chants 16 rounds every day. And she goes to school. Whew. She's very, no, but anyway, so don't, no, rather than comparing, it's certainly something you can do. Every day, something. 5 mantras or 10 mantras or whatever, you know, something every day. Do something every day. And then you may want to at some point increase that something that you do every day. But every day for a prolonged period of time with faith. And then the distraction will subside. Initially, I don't really like chanting. I like kirtan, and I like prasadam, and I like Krishna stories, but, you know, chanting is like, sawdust. I don't like sawdust. But I know it's good for me. So that's the faith. And then every day, something. For some extended period of time, with faith. I'll become attracted instead of distracted. That will come. And then it happens. Okay. Thank you for that nice question. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, question from Radhika Priya. When Lord Brahma was praying, why Lord Krishna was not replying anything, and rather he wanted to play with his cowherd friends?
Well, that should be, is it within her question is the answer.
He wanted to play with the cowherd.
Yeah. You know, if he said something, there'd be likely further exchange, so there wasn't any further exchange. He didn't say anything. He wanted to go back with the cowherd boys. That was his happiness. And it was also curbing pride of Indra, of Brahma. Both. Okay. Online, anything?
Question is from Archana Mataji. Hey Krishna Guru Maharaj, in one class I heard Lord Brahma was curious to understand the potency of Krishna. Sometimes I might be heading in wrong direction out of curiosity. Out of curiosity, how to be cautious, because curiosity is natural also. What is the application of curiosity in Krishna consciousness?
Well, curiosity is good. Just don't exercise curiosity in a matter that's offensive. Wanting to know is good. It's encouraged. Brahma jigyasa is good. Go about it in the right way, not by the power of speculation. That's built into Brahma's lesson here, his prayers. Jnane prayasa udapasya. The prayasa, the endeavor to understand things through speculative knowledge, udapasya, throw it away, discard it. So curiosity is good, but make sure your method is correct. And the method that's correct is by the hearing method and applying what you've been hearing. And then, like what happened with Brahma, then he got all kinds of realizations. So that's the method for checking misapplication of curiosity. Curiosity is good. And gosh, you're a very curious person. she inquires a lot, which is very good. Nothing wrong. Praised quality.
Another question, Guru Maharaj, is from Ram. Okay. Does the action of demigods are subjected to karmic reactions?
Are demigods subjected to karmic reaction? That's your question?
Does the action of demigods are subjected to karmic reactions?
Is there action of demigods subject to karmic reaction? Oh, yeah. When demigods do bad stuff, they get a karmic reaction. Yes. That's it.
One question I had, actually.
He's on.
Actually, how does Krishna look at the act of like Lord Indra and compared to the act of like Lord like Brahma? Because I think Lord Indra did a lot of like
He did bad stuff.
He did a lot of bad stuff. So compared to these two, how does Krishna...
It's very... What Indra did was attempted murder of the Brijvasis, of the cows, and of Krishna. That's bad stuff. And out of pride. You know, the motivation was, you know, terrible. With Brahma, he was curious. He did some bad stuff. But it didn't take, you know, 7 days and seven nights for Brahma's, you know, misgivings to have to get corrected. Because Indra kept that torrential rain going for 7 days, seven nights. That, you know, the Samvartika cloud, the cloud of that pours down rain at the time of devastation. He was like, you know, he was out of control. So very, very different level of wrong and Krishna's regard for that wrong. But at the same time, Indra has Krishna's mercy. He makes a number of mistakes, you know, regularly. And there's sometimes really bad ones. And then, you know, he tries to overcome it. Then he does some more stuff. So it goes with the post. He's in this very opulent position. And sometimes he just goes to his head. He becomes proud and does terrible things. But to get to heaven, you have to be very pious. What to speak of the King of Heaven, you have to be super very pious. So he has all that credential. And we find again and again, Vishnu, commonly, you know, helps him. You know, he's helping him overcome his pride, but he's also helping him be successful in his undertakings in various ways. So just comparing the two, which was your question, Indra's wrongdoing is much more culpable. And Brahma's wrongdoing is much lighter. But Krishna forgave them both. And they both returned to their abodes to continue with their service. Now, you know, Indra's not the head of a sampradaya. And Brahma's the head of a sampradaya. So in that case, it's the apichet sudaracharo verse applies. Sadhur eva samantavya. He's sadhu. And Indra is a demigod. He's not exactly a sadhu. He's an important person, but he's not a sadhu. So Krishna's regard is different. Their qualification is different. What they're entrusted to do is different. Okay?
Guru Maharaj, follow-up question from Radhika Priya. Mataji. For my own purification, if I sincerely pray to Lord Krishna, how will I understand that Lord Krishna will be answering to my prayers? He didn't give any answer to Lord Brahma.
Well, if you have the good fortune of standing before Krishna and offering his prayers, offering your prayers to him, likely you're going to get an answer that you can hear. But it's not that if you don't have Krishna standing before you, he's not hearing. He's hearing. He's hearing the prayers of Brahma. And Krishna will hear your prayers. Now, how Krishna responds, in what manner, that's completely up to him. But he's hearing your prayers. And your regard for him is particularly important. Like, you know, for what purpose are you praying? What, commonly, for example, with prayer, commonly there's some request along with some words of glorification. So what is your request? and what's your eligibility for receiving the fulfillment of that request, and will that be an obstacle in your bhakti path if Krishna fulfills that request? But so those are questions that don't necessarily have a clear answer, but Krishna knows, and he'll respond to your prayer and you know, in a direct and personal way, although you may not hear him say anything. And if you do hear him say something, please let me know what he says. Okay. Are we done?
Question from Tejaswini, daughter of Nistabra.
Who?
Natavar.
Okay. Natavar. Okay.
It's very small, okay. Was Brahma old when he was born, and if he was, why he was born old?
What's with that?
Was Brahma old when he was born, and if he was old, why he was born old?
Was Brahma old when he was born?
Yeah.
Or when?
Why was he born old?
If he was born old, then why was he born old?
Yeah.
Boy, that's, I never could even imagine asking and thinking that such a question. Was Brahma old when he was born? I'm at a loss. I'm stunned. Well, he didn't appear in a normal way. He didn't appear from the womb of a mother and have gestation period and come out of the womb of the mother and little baby form and cry and do what little babies do. That's not how he appeared. And did he appear old? Well, he didn't appear like a little baby from the womb of a mother. He appeared the way that he appeared. He appeared in a mature form. But, you know, so did some of the entities, some of the personalities who came from Brahma's body, they also appeared in their adult form. So, like the first Manu appeared in an adult form, ready to go with his wife. I mean, it wasn't like little babies and they grew up and later they got married. They appeared directly from Brahma's body. So that he didn't appear in a baby form, but he appeared in a mature form. Not exactly old, but a mature form. And then the second is, if so, why? So he had some service to do. And if Krishna wants you to do some service, he can equip you to do a service. He's not obliged to follow a certain pattern.
Another question.
How old is the person asking the question?
Around 11.
Okay.
Another question is from Shashi Rekha Devi Mataji. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, if everyone is subject to karmic reaction, what can be the destination of Indra? Does Indra in all yugas exhibit same kind of behavior? I read Vili Maharaj will be next Indra. Will he also behave in similar manner as previous Indra has behaved?
Well, it's not the primary demigods change with each Manu. Not each day of Brahma, but each Manu. There's 14 Manus during each day of Brahma, and the demigods are appointed their post. Kind of like a president becomes elected and the president nominates his cabinet members. something like that. So Manu appoints persons to occupy different posts of demigods. So Indra is a post, and there's different persons that occupy the post appointed by Manu. And, you know, there are differences, but there's patterns. You know, it seems to go along with the territory, in other words, that if you get the post of Brahma on the one hand, but on the other hand, there's this enormous amount of piety to achieve that post. And with that piety comes an enormous amount of power and opulence, which may get the best of a person who, if they're given that they're not pure. Because if the person was pure, they wouldn't be in the post of Indra. They'd be in some higher situation. So it's a slippery slope being in the post of Brahma. Loss of piety and loss of opulence and tendency to become overwhelmed by the opulence and the piety and the power. It doesn't guarantee that one's going to do the, you know, certain things, but there's tendencies that goes with that post, as far as I can understand. Okay. More?
Yeah, I have two questions, but there is one question online.
And there's a couple with hands up too. So you do yours.
Okay.
Then we'll come back for the online ones.
Okay. Sure. So, Guru Maharaj, my first question is, actually this is an application question, Guru Maharaj. Brahma, and he didn't heard anything back from Krishna. He just heard the word of the, like, tapa, and then he did the austerity for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So, basically, if I don't see any, there is a reciprocation, but unfortunately, if I don't see that reciprocation, how can I be determinant to, you know, to do such kind of austerity sometimes, and it is required.
There's more to what happened with Brahma, but that's not your question. Your question is how to carry on if you don't see some results. Right?
Yes, Guru Maharaj, yes.
It's with faith. It's with faith. And faith. And it's true, you know, the faith that you require in your position is not so different than your daughter's faith that she requires in her position. Like, what, you know, what would inspire her to start chanting every day instead of, like, sometimes? So it's faith, not pressure. You know, it's some faith. This is going to be good for me. And so according to faith, then you carry on. And according to faith, you'll get some realization. According to acting in knowledge has a result. There's purification. And when there's purification, you experience something and so you continue. So like, let's take your life, not just your, you know, anybody. There was a time when you weren't chanting, and there's now you're chanting, and has anything changed in your life, inside or outside? So it may not be what you want, but it's not like nothing happened. I heard a disciple of Tamal Krishnaraj named Radhakrishnan, really nice devotee, brahmachari, said Tamal Krishnaraj used to say this regularly. Like, you know, because he often would preach in Fiji. He was, like, celebrated for doing all these challenging things in Fiji. He said, I'll give you $5,000 if you commit to chant seriously for 3 months every day and nothing happens. I'll give you $5,000. And I mean it, you know, because I know something's going to happen. So, you know, to say that the result may not be what you want, expectation may be here and reality may be here and it doesn't meet your expectation, but something is happening. And even if that's something that's happening is by chanting, I'm realizing my heart is infested with impurities that I didn't even know were there before I started chanting. My consciousness was so dull and so covered like a donkey. I didn't even see with the stuff that was inside. And now I started chanting. And, no, look at all that stuff. So that's good. It means, you know, cleansing is going on. Elevation of consciousness to recognize I've got a lot of work to do. Now, some people don't want to look at that. They want to like, I don't want to look at that impure stuff. And so they, whatever they do, instead of, there are different, all I'm saying here is there are different measures of the cheta dharpana marjanam, the cleansing of consciousness that's taking place through spiritual activity. If we do the, you know, before and after, what was my life like before? And what is my life today? It's different. Behaviors are different. Values are different. Consciousness is different. Sensitivities are different. Introspection is different. Relationships are different. Eating habits are different. Speech is different. Okay.
My another question was, I hope I'm able to. Maharaj, like about my prescribed duties, actually.
Occupational life.
Yeah, Guru Maharaj. So every day I actually pray that whatever I'm going to do today, it is on service to my Guru and Krishna, and just I offer it mentally. And if something good happens, I still offer it. But when something is bad, it affects me and it also impacts me while chanting. And I have the knowledge that I should not be attached because we have that knowledge written in Bhagavad Gita, and I understand that, but somehow I feel that it is still impacting, though I have the knowledge, but still it is impacting me.
Keep going. It's purification. What you're saying is very common. There's what we know that's way up here, and where I am, it's way down here. There's a big gap between what I know and where I am. But let me move towards where I want to go. And it's uncomfortable. Because we like being comfortable. But nescience isn't comfortable. So to go to knowledge, to what we know, it's an uncomfortable ride sometimes. It's like uncharted territory. We're out of our comfort zone now. We're going from what we're accustomed to new territory. It's uncomfortable. The transition is uncomfortable. Commonly, transition is it's like teenage life. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, Guru Maharaj. Actually, like, I'm reading Mahabharata and Life of Pandavas, and when I read that, it really gives me strength.
They went through stuff, and I think I can too. And rely on Krishna. Okay. You have something. You have something.
On Monday evening.
Monday evening.
Yes.
This is Wednesday, two nights ago.
Yes. I was asking the question about killing the snake and scorpion.
Yes.
That time you mentioned in Prahlad Maharaj's story something about.
Yes.
I thought I know the story. Can you just?
Yes. You want to? Okay. Prahlad speaks of his father being killed, and he makes a comment saying that sadhus become happy when a scorpion or a snake are killed. So now the commentary says, even if unprovoked, a snake or a scorpion may attack, and their attack is deadly. And therefore, sadhus are relieved because it's for not just themselves, it's people in general. They're protected when a scorpion or a poisonous snake is killed because people are protected. And similarly, that his father was killed, he's worse than a snake. That was the context. You have something.
Two questions online. This question is from Amaramantaji. How Lord Brahma's curiosity was connected with false ego?
Well, we don't speak of Lord Brahma as a living entity covered with false ego. He's the head of our sampradaya. We don't speak of him like that. So why did he do what he did? He was curious. And Krishna was taking the opportunity to rectify him. I mean, later in the 10th canto, there's this scene where Krishna's in Dwarka and Krishna calls Brahma to come see him, all the way from Brahmaloka to Krishna to Dwarka. So Brahma comes, and there's a whole chapter on it, but so many Brahmas come simultaneously. And he can see all of the Brahmas coming simultaneously, but they can't see him. And so he's realizing once again, he's being reminded by Krishna once again of his insignificance. So, Krishna's keeping Brahma on his toes, his humility toes. And he's giving him a glimpse of the residence of Vrindavan, as Krishna did with Uddhava, Krishna did with Brahma. I mean, the way was different, but, so there's many things being accomplished by one thing. It's not a good idea to think of Brahma was covered by false ego. Okay?
This question is from 9-year-old Adhika.
Okay.
I heard Indra's body is covered with eyes. Do they blink?
Probably. Something else. Do you have something online?
Kirti Prabhu is asking, I heard the following. Indra's offense brought residents of Raja closer to Krishna.
Brought which closer?
Residents of Raja.
Residents of Raja.
While Brahma's offense took the friends of Krishna away from him. Therefore, Brahma's offense was bigger. Is
no,
that true?
Not true. Krishna, for 1 year, accepting the forms of the cowherd boys and calves, was fulfilling the desires of the mothers and the cows to have Krishna as their son or their calf. And the bulls were having Krishna as their son. So Brahma was just facilitating. What Brahma did was, one can say, yoga maya arranged for Brahma to do what Brahma did. We don't think of him as a false ego or, more culpable than Indra. But, Krishna achieves many things through each thing he does. That's one of his qualities. and Brahma was an instrument to help fulfill the desire of the mothers of the cowherd boys and the cows with their calves. So I don't know where you heard that, but you can leave that one to the side.
This question is from Radha, Nitya Gaurang Prabhu's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
In Krishna Leela, Indra tried to devastate Vraja by pouring torrents of rain.
Yeah.
While Brahma tried to hide the kids in Brahma Vimohan Leela, which one is more offensive?
This is the third time around. Brahma's was more offensive. Attempted murder is different than kidnapping. And the motivation was out of pride and anger at Krishna. And Brahma's was more out of curiosity. So it's very different. The answer is the same as the other two times.
This question is from Satish Bhatnagar. Are there any instances where Srila Prabhupada gave the silent treatment?
I'm sure there must have been. I'm not familiar. Hari Sori told the story that there are different levels of Prabhupada's response to misconduct or not following an instruction. And the first level was Prabhupada would very gently and clearly explain, this is not to be done, it should be done like this. And the second was, if once instructed, Prabhupada expected that one would learn from the first time. And if it wasn't done, not learned the first time, he would speak strongly. And sometimes even become a little angry. And then the third time, his lower lip would tremble. He would not say anything. That was the silent treatment. But he was visibly displeased. Now, does that mean he's like a conditioned soul that got angry because what he wanted didn't happen? Not like that. He was always in the mood of instructing, and his conduct and his speech was always instructive. But so it was purposeful, because devotees had become attached to him and his heart, and they wanted to please him. And when he showed displeasure, that was sufficient correction. Like, instead of a stick, just holding your finger and shaking your finger, saying, don't do that. Or even what saying, don't even say, don't do that, just go like that. Is that it?
This is from Pratibahu Prabhu.
I think we'll make this the last one, because it's late. Do you have something? Okay.
Pratibahu Prabhu.
Okay, let's do Pratibahu.
Does Lord Brahma make this very same mistake every day in every kalpa when Krishna comes to Vrindavan to enact this pastime?
I don't know if he does it every day. You have something? That's it?
This is from Kiti Prabhu again. It is very difficult for me to make an apology, but when I do, I expect some response.
Of course.
How can I move to the position of recognizing that person I offended has a prerogative to respond when and how whenever
they
like
it? Well, just like you have prerogative, you honor that they have prerogative. That's how you do it. And you let go of your expectation. The main gesture of apology is offering apology. And then what the other person does, that's their free will choice, as you have a free will choice to offer apology or not, or when someone apologizes to you, do you respond or how do you respond? You know, they allow for free will in the other person. Is that it? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
This one, Mr. Prabhupada Ki Jai.